Michael Corrin had a piece in the Globe and Mail yesterday. You might have seen it. It was called The Battle for Christianity in Canada. And he pointed out the obvious difference, that there is a huge gulf between the evangelical right and its understanding of Christianity and the liberal social justice left and its understanding of Christianity. And the gulf is getting wider, and either side is not speaking much to the other. And in the middle of the article was a quotation by a former Anglican bishop who has now become a member of the Eastern Orthodox Church. A very simple quotation, but when I read it, it really rang true for me. This is what he said. "God is not so much the object of our knowledge as the cause of our wonder." I love that. Not so much the object of our knowledge as the cause of our wonder. I think there's a lot of mutuality in that sentiment. The poet Robert Frost wrote a poem called A Passing Glimpse. It's just a little poem. And it reads, "Was something brushed across my mind that no one on earth will ever find? Heaven gives glimpses only to those not in a position to look too close." Not in a position to look too close. On Easter Sunday, we have a glimpse of something, just a glimpse. It has the gravitas of heaven, but it is so powerful and so deep that we are not in a position to look too close. Easter and its meaning are a multi-layered narrative. At the heart of the story is the cruel death of a Jewish political rebel, one of thousands crucified in the ancient Roman Empire, nameless, unremembered casualties of a clash of global visions. As with all conquering empires, Rome created its peace through conquest, and then it hired all its poets and great writers to create a pantheon of meaning around the rise of Rome. "The gods breathed grace, and Rome was born," they wrote, and the Romans lapped it up. Anyone who followed a dead Jew was a fool in such a setting. Laid over that, we have a growing conviction that we have seen this confrontation before, and we're going to see it again and again in the moving of the world. The dispossessed rise up behind a sudden champion, and then the powerful elite brings the champion down, and the rebellion is over, at least for now. But this desire for liberty and for a nobility of life will simply not go away. The quest for freedom will never accept slavery, and the dream of love and justice will never settle for tyranny. Survivors will keep that fragile lantern lit as long as there are people swimming in the heavy seas towards the shore. And soon, small groups of formerly disenchanted and disinherited people began to encourage one another with a profound conviction that something has shifted. Finally, something has shifted. This time, goodness has survived the onslaught. Goodness won the day. The life of one good man has broken the grip of death. They told each other, out loud, whispering to each other, in each other's ears, the same news, the same news. The messenger of God has come and claimed the world. Alleluia. He is in the hands of God, and no torment shall ever touch him. In the eyes of the foolish, he seems to have died, but he is at peace. And then laid over that all down the years until today, we wrestle with the meaning. What does it mean? What does it mean for the political systems that rule us? What does it mean for the social conventions that push us around and lead us down a variety of roads? What does it mean for our own destiny, we ask ourselves? What does it mean that love and justice have triumphed over its opposition? Who shall we believe? Who shall we follow in our little lives? How shall we battle to hold open this door of grace? Well, if the risen Christ and the risen life are real, then we now know where the power is, We might have wondered where the power is. We might have followed it to a variety of different endings. But now, if this news is true, we know where the power is. We see how vast is the range of our own small lives. We have been invited into something that takes us beyond our living years and connects us to people we've never met all down the centuries, singing a song with the most majestic of endings. We see the values that must now be claimed to make the day our own for the good of the world. Justice and mercy and love and truth and fellowship and mutual support among the human family. If they say some dust thrown in my eyes will keep my talk from getting overwise, I'm not the one for putting off the proof. Let it be overwhelming, rolling off the roof, around the corner, blizzards in the dust. Let them blind me to a standstill, if you must. I will press the saving blade, though it cut me like a knife. I will pursue the sunlight refracted through the dust of life. There is the conviction. This morning we sit among modern boxes of meaning. We've brought some with us today, and others are found in the culture in which we live. Some of the labels vary. Some are too faint to read anymore, and some seem too old in their ideas even to matter about them, and some are just far too hot to handle. We're not opening that box. We'd never get away with it, we say. And yet some boxes do lie open, and in them we behold a room beyond the tomb. The meaning of Easter takes us somewhere today. Now, the empty tomb story, and lots of people have difficulty with the empty tomb story, it stops them right there. The empty tomb story is a literary vehicle, a created literary vehicle created by the writer. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the writer's way of confessing the faith that lay behind it. Before we can tell about a rising from the dead, before we could even write about an empty tomb or any other expression of life, we need to have experienced the power of rising from the dead in our own life. If we were unaware of that, we wouldn't recognize an empty tomb or anything else if we saw it. Something happens in us, and then we tell the story in any way we can. First comes the conviction that we have lived through and beyond death, and that conviction changes us into believers in this world, and then we choose ways of telling other people. And the empty tomb is one of the ways that the gospel writers used. Others used angelic messengers. Others used stories of appearances to dear friends. And others spoke about forgiveness and restitution and healing and the transformation of lives in small villages and indeed everywhere. Death in all its forms is diminished, they say. Death as war. Death as alienation from each other. Death as accident. Death as illness, death as age or infirmity. As John Donne, the great poet and preacher, wrote, "Death, thou shalt die." That's the essence of it. St. Paul wrote his letters in the New Testament long before the Gospels were written, and he does not choose or mention the empty tomb. It is not a vehicle that he uses to express his faith. Rather, he tells stories about awakening lives, lives like ours that saw it one way and have suddenly been ushered into seeing it in a more dynamic and wonderful way, the movement of an anchored assurance now moving across a vast area. He also tells of his own awakening, moving from a fierce reactionary faithfulness, hanging on for dear life to his faith, unless the world undo it, to an open-ended world of possibility. He writes, "Lastly, he appeared even to me, a persecutor of the church. He even called himself an abortion in the birthing room of faith." That's very strong language. He writes, "I am the least of the apostles. I am what I am. But he appeared also to me." Faith and political action now make sense. The power of God released in the Spirit of the risen Christ will transform and heal the human heart. It will break the powers of empire. It will. If it's released in the world, it will break the powers of the empires that are breaking us. Gods in their temple will tremble, and slaves in their prisons will sing. And St. Paul, the great evangelist of the early church, began to write and to think and to dream, and he made friends from enemies to whom he would never have spoken in his former days, and he crossed boundaries he never would have crossed, and he faced threats, and he paid for his faith with his life in a Roman prison. His life and work will encourage those seeking to believe in this greater revelation. Here is Christ, he said, alive and moving through the experiences of people just like us, transforming them and thus transforming the world. St. Paul knows there's a room beyond the tomb. This fresh breeze, this Easter rising, is the greatest news humanity has ever heard. Isn't that what you want to know? What happens to us ultimately? Do we just wind down and die? Do we lose our loved ones forever? Here is the greatest news we ever wish to hear. The rising of the Christ is our rising as well. It ain't over when it's over. Well, once we're convinced that our lives are safe beyond the pain and the distance and the death, once we have been moved to feel its truth, how can we keep from singing? We play it small, like a moray eel in an old Greek jar, lunging out to feed and then falling back again into safety. God plays it large, stirring orchestrations in the whole cosmos, and ending up with all the stellar beauty in the eyes of one triumphant life in the heart of one undying love. Now the prophet Isaiah, who was also a remarkable poet, dares to describe the location and the furnishings of the room beyond the tomb. Did you hear them? This is poetry, but poetry always comes from somewhere deeper than its words. He says it's a penthouse suite on a mountaintop in the sky. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Now, don't be literal about it. Go deep. Let the poet in you come out to speak. We're going to have mountaintop moments in our life experience, and they're going to take us places we've never been before. The valley drains, but the mountain inspires, he says. There is a feast of rich fare and fine wines there, he says. So this is not about a test we can't pass, or a cadence we can't sing, or a demand we can't meet, or a judgment we can't escape. When you read between the lines, he says, we're going to be full there, fullness, with a little sense of mild intoxication. Well, that's not bad. And a sense of being very deeply fed. That appeals to me. The shroud of death will be ripped away, writes the poet. We can finally let our grief go. Wouldn't you want to let the weight of your grief go? Let your loved ones go. Let that which you feel you have lost go, for it is safe, and it is complete, and it is whole, and it is waiting for you in the room beyond the tomb. Let that sink in just for a moment, and we begin right now, right on this day, right in this life, to ascend to our lives in the heaven of God. The room beyond the tomb is not some theological concept too hard to believe or a confession too wild to consider. It is neither of those two. It is an experience and it's a destination. We are all being gathered up into something wondrous forever, and when the truth dawns on you, it dawns with all the bells and whistles. The light of God is on its streets. The gates are open wide. The waters of the river of life flow like crystal from the throne of God right down the middle of the city street. There is a harvest there in the larder. There's fruit in the season and leaves for healing of the nation, writes another poet at the end of the New Testament. Listen, we're all teaching each other and telling each other things all the time. Most of them are really awful things when you think about them. We agonize over war, and we fuss and fume about politics. Don't give her another term. Never elect him. He'll wreck the place. We take sides about religion, and we look down our noses at those who do not stand on our side. We judge each other over morality. She is sweet, he is bad, it's as clear as that. End of conversation. We worry about money, and we fear for our safety in the streets. We wonder what's going to happen to our children and all the species of the world. Talk, talk, talk. Well, let's tell each other about the room at the beyond the tomb, the room beyond the tomb. Say that our best dreams are not in vain. Have courage to say that to the people you meet. Say that they're witnesses and they're forerunners from a good place, and that they speak a truth, which is the truth we've always longed to hear, the desire for a noble and rich blessing. Love is not in vain. Say that to each other and see the difference it begins to make. Now, God sends us on these heady, hearty quests because there's real truth in them. There is a destination at the end of them. There really is. You can't look too close, as Robert Frost suggests, but you can catch a passing glimpse, and we do. Thoughts of this small room beyond the tomb may start very small indeed, like a seed sown. Perhaps you hear the Easter story differently today and go away with it planting itself in your life. Perhaps you see a broad and sacrificial life somewhere, and you're startled by it, and you ask yourself, why is this person living this way? Or you feel a restlessness inside you that cannot be easily quelled. You've tried 100 other things, but the restlessness is still gnawing. Or you may grow tired of the inanity of wasted pursuits and reach out for something you cannot yet see. As we grow into it, the room expands into hallways and antechambers and porches and sunrooms, and we meet others we love to meet, and we meet others we are destined to meet, who are in our destiny and in our future forever. Worship is still a common meeting ground for such things, together in a song, quietly in a spoken prayer, in a sudden conviction in the silence of the church, in a sense of something pregnant in the air around us. Suddenly this room becomes that room, a little hint of the room beyond the tomb. Suddenly a dead Jew on a cross long ago stands before us in life, the first fruits of those who sleep. Death is past, life is here, and it belongs to us. Now, there is an open-endedness to this mystery. You can't get too close to it. I could not sum it up for you completely today. Neither could you to me. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. There it is. There is the mystery. Chew on it. Work on it. Let it bring out your wonder. Now, St. Mark, who wrote the earliest gospel, knows this is true. He was so brief and so sparse in his resurrection story that scholars down the centuries felt somebody must have torn the real ending off the thing and threw it away. Indeed, someone else wrote a second ending of Mark and stuck it in there, and you can see it in some of the other editions of Mark's gospel. But Mark wrote exactly what he wanted to write. The women came expecting one thing, and suddenly they met the future. They did not understand it one bit. Who can? They went home terrified, saying nothing to anyone. See what you see. Let it overcome you with a sense of wonder. Surprise yourself. Let it gestate. Say nothing to anyone until the seed is deeply planted, and then quietly tell people what you found. Now, my wife Elspeth sells real estate, and she's good at it. She says the two great factors in a place to call home are location and walkability. Well, a room beyond the tomb, that's a good location. How much a better location could you find for your life and for your eternal life than that? And walkability? Why, you can travel through that room from here to eternity.